CBSI and the World with Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor. The Iran deal from 2015, JCPOA, on again, off again. The news these last days, incomplete, but it suggests that the European part of the conversation has now reached a final stage, sometimes called a final draft. We welcome Jonathan Schanzer. Dr. Schanzer is Senior Vice President for Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Jonathan, good evening to you. The European remark, any remarks, what is your expectation of the reawakened Iran deal now? Good evening.
Good evening. Well, it appears that somehow Rob Malley, the negotiator on the U.S. side, has been able to resurrect this deal. It certainly appeared moribund just a week or so ago. And it appears that the U.S. is offering Iran the deal of the millennium, as my colleague Rich Goldberg put it. The Russians are claiming that they're 5 minutes or 5 seconds from the finish line. And if I understand everything correctly, it is everything that Iran might have wanted, something in the order of $275 billion of cash or sanctions relief and cash incentives, along with, from what we understand, a proposal to ignore every past violation that Iran has committed on the nuclear front. Truly a shocking cave on the part of the P5+1, if this is correct.
Malcolm?
We also saw that they talked about the 82 companies of the Iran Revolutionary Guard being removed, and ultimately $1 trillion by 2030 in sanctions relief. So this seems to be a complete capitulation if these reports are true, because we see on the other side that they're saying they didn't get off the FTO, the Foreign Terrorist Organization list, although I think the money is far more important to them. So how do you assess now the next step in the negotiations inside Iran, the role of Russia, which seems to be outsized both in the internal negotiations and with the negotiations with the West?
Maybe look, first, I think it's important to note that these companies that may be delisted, maybe removed from the sanctions list, they're very likely part of the IRGC itself. So it could be the case that the IRGC remains on the sanctions list, but all of the companies that enrich the IRGC are able to do business all around the world. I think that might be the carve out that was created by Rob Malley and Ulyanov, the Russian negotiator. On the Russian side, I think it's worth noting that they will likely receive billions of dollars in contracts to construct additional nuclear power plants in Iran and to store nuclear material. This is all, again, I can't imagine that Iran could really ask for much more. I think the real question that everyone's asking right now is whether the Supreme Leader actually wants a deal. He may find that it's more advantageous for him to string this out while Iran continues to make advances in its nuclear program so that it could dash to a bomb at a time of its choosing without having made another deal with the devil, as they see it, the United States, of course, being the devil here. I think they just may not be very interested in it. And I think when we look at some of the news that we've seen just over the last couple of days, IRGC plots to assassinate John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, for example, it certainly doesn't seem that the Iranians are particularly keen to get into a binding deal with the United States.
Jonathan, the puzzle here, what does the United States get out of this deal? Because we're not in active conflict with Iran right now. So where's the payoff?
Well, the payoff, I think, is kicking the nuclear can down the road for, I don't know, maybe 5 years, maybe a few years more than that. I'm not even sure we get that, but I believe that the Biden administration would like to forestall conflict with Iran as much as humanly possible. I think there's also a strong sense that the Democrats want to make good on what was seen anyway as the Obama administration's signature win, perhaps the only win that it had in the realm of foreign policy. So they've been committed to this from the beginning. I really don't see how it benefits the United States for more than a few years. And by the way, if we're concerned about seeing more unrest across the region, along the lines of what we just saw this past weekend in Israel as it battled the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a deal like this that gives Iran $275 billion worth of sanctions relief in the first year, we are sure to see money trickling down to the likes of Islamic Jihad, but also Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, Shiite militias across the Middle East. I mean, this is a sure recipe for disaster and unrest across the region for years to come. I don't see how this benefits the U.S.-led world order. I think probably every one of our Middle East allies would likely have to really consider whether it's time to switch horses and go with China, which has been a major concern of the United States. So I see a lot of risk with the deal that is on the table. But nonetheless, that's where the Biden administration has steered things, at least for now.
Malcolm?
And the sunset clauses start to kick in, I think, in the year, year and a half. So there's almost no benefit. By the time the deal is signed and everything is concluded, the sunset clauses will start. The Iranians will be off to the races. And we know even signing the deal doesn't stop them.
No, that's right. And I think it's important to note here, guys, that in 2023, that is the end of the ballistic missile restrictions on Iran. So, I mean, this is the ballistic missiles are how a nuclear weapon would be delivered. That is the delivery system. So with that off the table, in less than a year from now, you can really see how this entire thing would be fleeting. I think the only upshot for the United States, at least in the way they would sell it, would be that, hey, we have Iran committing to some kind of restrictions on the advances of its nuclear program. But again, I think they're fleeting. I think you're right.
I think adding to the lack of rationality in this, what we've heard the deal is, we don't know for sure, is the fact that this will also enable Russia to bypass the sanctions because they're doing it already with Iran. They're setting up export routes. They've been selling oil, competing with them over the export of oil, and selling, transferring armed drones for Russia to use in Ukraine. And at the same time, they put an Iranian satellite into orbit. So it seems to me that we're forcing them, the Russia and Iran together, with Ankara picking up the tail, but more importantly, undermining our whole sanctions regime against Russia.
I think that's 100% right. And if we start pumping money into Iran, and by the way, one of the things that we continue to hear from apologists for this deal is that it's going to help put more oil back on the market. But if they continue to work with Russia and Russia continues to wage war in Ukraine, then we're going to see a continuation of the oil crisis that we are trying to get a handle on right now. So it's this vicious circle that's being created here. But undeniably, Russia gets the sweetheart deal out of all of this. There are carve outs for working with Iran in terms of the nuclear file and perhaps other things as well. So it really makes very little strategic sense. I have to say it's very confusing to watch the Biden administration stumble as it looks for a coherent foreign policy.
I'm looking at the map of Eurasia, Jonathan, from 20,000 feet. Afghanistan, almost a year ago, we left. And at that moment, the questions were raised, is the U.S. leaving Eurasia? Is the U.S. leaving the Middle East? With the Iran deal, it even looks like that question was sharper now than it was a year ago. What is your measure? Has the Biden administration decided this is none of our affair and we're backing off to NATO?
I think that's certainly the hope here from the Biden administration is that they could pivot to Asia. But what they don't quite understand, John, is that, you know, when you start to pull out of these places or you capitulate on, you know, a nuclear standoff along these lines, what it does is it actually opens up space for China to come in, to be able to sell goods and services, to create alliance structures that would essentially erode America's standing as the hegemon, as the leading superpower in the world. I see these moves as only leveling the playing field between Beijing and Washington. And so it is extremely dangerous as we watch these events unfold.
Malcolm?
Can you just quickly comment on what are the implications for the other Abraham Accord countries of the recent activities, the war in Gaza? Many of them were silent or very moderate in their responses.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, I think we can be quite pleased at the responses that we saw. I think last year's war, the 11-day war with Hamas, was a far messier affair, and tensions were running far higher. Obviously, you know, the last year's war was focused more around Jerusalem. This one was really about Israeli actions against Palestinian Islamic jihad terrorists in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So there was, I think, less on the line. But when we look at the responses, they're far more upbeat coming from all of the countries, except for maybe one, and that's Jordan, right? So we saw Bahrain, UAE, Morocco, and even Egypt, I think, playing an important role as a mediator. But all of them, I think, really sending out the right messages, calling for calm and not blaming Israel for a conflict that, quite honestly, it didn't really begin. So all of that, I think, is quite positive. The two negatives that I'd point out here is that Jordan continues to have very, very sharp rhetoric as it relates to Israel. I am quite concerned. This is, of course, a relationship that dates back to 1994, but I would say that it looks rockier now than it has in quite a while. The royal court does not seem particularly pleased with its relationship with Israel, and it's hard to understand given how much Israel does to support Jordan's security. And to ensure its water and energy shortages are met. The other one was Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia issued some rather harsh statements, and I think some of that might have to do with the fact that they continue to wrestle with the optics of getting closer to the Israelis after Biden's visit last month.
Jonathan Schanzer, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.